Thank you for donating more than $65,000 to Issues Etc. in the past month. And with 2 weeks left in 2013, we're $25,000 short of making budget. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift online at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. Send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us at the end of the year.
I'm a man of blood, Katie. I divide people. Thousands have died because of it. Most days I'm so depressed I can't even get out of bed. People try to make me a fixed star. But I'm not. I'm a wandering planet. No one should look to me for guidance.
Two things I promise you. We will make joyous music together. And to get to you, your enemies will have to step across my dead body.
An excerpt from the Luther movie. Martin Luther and his soon-to-be wife, Catherine von Bora. It's a fascinating story to delve into the lives of these people. Martin Luther, fascinating in and of himself. So it should come as no surprise to us that the marriage life and the family life of he and his wife, Catherine Luther, is equally fascinating. Join us to talk about Catherine Luther, wife of the 16th century reformer Martin Luther, Professor Mark DeGarmo. He's Associate Professor of Religious Studies at Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, Minnesota. He's translator of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, The Mother of the Reformation, The Amazing Life and Story of Catherine Luther. Professor DeGarmo, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Before she was Catherine Luther, the wife of the famous reformer, who was she?
Well, Catherine von Bora, as a young girl, was the daughter of landed gentry, Hans von Bora. And then when she was just a young child, she was put in a convent, and so she would have been Sister Catherine. And through much of her education, much of her younger years, that's how people would have known her probably, until she escaped from the convent, of course.
Why was she put into a convent?
Her mother died, and she was put in the convent when she was quite young, 5 or 6 years old, I think it was. And her father remarried, and it seems that this is part of what her stepmother would have wished, is that Katie would have been in a convent. It would have been, first of all, for education purposes, because that was the only way a young girl in Germany at that time could have had an education, and they would have been able to provide that at the monastery and no other place. And then a little later on, there seems to be some change in the family, and she stays in the convent and now is intended to be a nun. She wasn't at first intended to be a nun, but now that seems to be her life's course. By age 9, she moves to a different convent. And the nice thing about that is that there were two relatives of hers at that convent, one on her father's side and one on her mother's side, so they could kind of watch over her, keep in contact with the family and everything.
Today this kind of situation is considered very rare, but I take it that especially in northern Germany, this is not that unusual for families, larger families, to send off children to religious service.
Yeah, that was not an uncommon thing. There were many, many young girls, especially from people who who had some, you know, land and opportunity, that they wanted their girls to be educated at least at first. And then, of course, being a nun was a high calling considered in the medieval age, and so it was something of an honor to become a nun or a monk or a priest, and so many people went for that reason, so that they could do things for themselves but also for their families.
What would life at the convent have been like for Catherine von Bora?
Well, we know that the girls themselves were very much busy with educational activities and especially religious activities, a lot of prayers, services, you know, on the hours, the canonical hours, matins and vespers and all the other things that we're somewhat familiar with. And education, I don't know how much they would have done otherwise. There were certainly gardens for them. I don't know how much work they did themselves. There were plenty of other people on the convent grounds who were taking care of the farming and the gardening and the milking and the taking care of all the animals. It was an amazing little city almost by itself when you had a convent. I think at one point Croker says there were 40 other workers that worked at this convent where Catherine was somewhat earlier.
As a nun, would this have been considered a permanent arrangement that she would be in service of the church her entire life?
That's my understanding of it, yes.
So what circumstances bring about, as you mentioned before, her escape from the convent?
That's that's somewhat shrouded in mystery. We don't really know exactly how she came to know about the gospel, but it seems that she must have had some contact with things to do with the Lutheran Reformation. We know that Luther himself arranged for the escape and for the man Coppe to come in and to help them escape under cover of darkness. But exactly how that would have been known, we don't know for sure. Although there is speculation, because one of the nuns was a sister, I think, of Staupitz, and so there would have been a connection to Luther in that way.
This is somewhat the stuff of legend, but how was her and the other nuns, how was their escape affected?
Well, it was under cover of darkness, and it was on Easter Eve, and they had to be very secretive about it because the other people were not allowed into the convent, and especially into the inner part of the convent. There were no men allowed in there unless one of the nuns was sick and the priest would come in and help in some way. But there was this man, Leonhard Coppe, who regularly brought and carried things away from the convent in a wagon, and that was just kind of a normal thing for him to do. And so he brought his wagon, and somehow they communicated with each other as far as what time they were going to meet and everything, and he hid them in his wagon somehow. It was a covered wagon, as we can think of it, and we don't know exactly how it was done, but he took them out by night and took them to Torgau, where they stayed for a few days, and then most of them went on to Wittenberg.
You mentioned that Luther had a hand in arranging for this. What was his rationale for, I mean, this certainly wasn't the only time he would do something like this, but what was his rationale for seeing to it that people in religious orders, especially the nuns, could leave that life? What was he thinking?
Well, I think religious life had lost, at least religious life, as you'd think of it in the Middle Ages, had lost its meaning for with the Lutheran Reformation, because it didn't have the same idea of, you know, release from purgatory or meritory good works and stuff like that. It was something that just didn't have the same impact anymore. There were ways to serve the church, but there were other ways to serve God in other vocations, and I think Luther understood that, and that's part of what the Lutheran Reformation had a big part in bringing about in our understanding of things today. And so for Katie sitting there in the monastery going through the prayers, that was fine and good, but there was no reason for her not to live a life out in the world and for other nuns to do the same thing. And maybe they could be more helpful to the society by doing that.
So after her escape from the convent, what circumstances brought Catherine and Luther together?
Well, she came to Wittenberg, first to Torgau for a few days, and then on to Wittenberg. And she stayed in homes of some of the people there, the Reichenbach family and the Cranach family. And I think it's really there that she learned what it was like to live in secular society. She'd been behind the walls of the monastery for so long, she didn't really know how to interact with people, is how I picture it anyway. And there she got to know what it was like to be in a normal household and to interact with other people, girls, boys, men, women, nobility, and whoever. And so she's there for a few years, and most of the other nuns that had escaped were getting married, and moving off to other places or settling down with their husband, and Katie didn't have anyone right away. There was someone that she was interested in, and I don't think they were technically engaged, but they had really fallen in love with each other, Jerome Baumgartner. But there were reasons that couldn't happen from his family's point of view. And so then Katie is still there, and someone else had approached her, and she was not willing to marry that person. And so she goes to Luther's friend Amsdorf and says, "Now listen, I can't do this, but I will marry either you or Luther himself." And so she kind of initiates things in some ways. When Luther first got to know Katie, he didn't really take to her. He considered her to be kind of too proud or too arrogant or something. But as he got to know her, and then especially after this conversation with Amsdorf, Luther must have found out about this. Amsdorf must have talked to him, because his attitude changes and he becomes more and more interested. And then eventually they were married.
With only about 30 seconds here, what would it have meant, even with the Reformation underway, to marry a nun, to marry someone from a former religious life? I take it that was societally frowned upon in the extreme. About 30 seconds.
Well, and especially with Luther himself being a former monk, there were stories about a monk and a nun marrying each other and bearing a child, and this would be a great disaster for the church. And so he did have to think about it very carefully.
We're talking with Professor Mark DeGarmo. He's translator of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, The Mother of the Reformation, The Amazing Life and Story of Catherine Luther. When we come back, we'll continue with him for about another half hour. Then we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, 4 soundbites that we have ready to play for you. All you've got to do to play this little game is listen to the 4 soundbites, decide which one you think ought to be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, and then give us a call, send us an email, or vote at our Facebook fan page. Now, listeners with the best questions or comments on Katie Luther in the next half hour will get a copy of this Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, The Mother of the Reformation, The Amazing Life and Story of Catherine Luther. Give us a call. This break is a great time to call with questions or comments. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet @issuesetc. Or we've left space at our Facebook fan page for your questions or comments on Catherine Luther. Facebook.com/issuesetc, Facebook.com/issuesetc. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We'll be right back.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at BethanyLCMS.org.
Here's an opportunity for you to get up to 75% off many of the resources you hear us promote on Issues Etc. It's Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale from 8 in the morning until noon on Saturday, November the 2nd. Concordia Publishing House is located south of Interstate 44 at 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. The 2013 warehouse sale, Saturday morning, November the 2nd, at Concordia Publishing House, 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Katie Luther, wife of 16th century reformer Martin Luther, on this Friday afternoon, October the 18th. Our guest, Professor Mark DeGarmo, Associate Professor of Religious Studies at Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, Minnesota, translator of the Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for October, The Mother of the Reformation, The Amazing Life and Story of Catherine Luther. You can join us with questions or comments. We're giving away some copies of that book to listeners with the best questions or comments. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or we've left space at our Facebook fan page for you to put questions or comments on Katie Luther right there, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. A couple questions from our listeners before we pick up the story of Katie and Martin Luther when they get married. Todd in Edmond, Oklahoma has this one. He says, is it known how many nuns stayed in the cloister during this period, and how much true danger was there for Katie and her peers who had to be snuck out of the cloister? What are your thoughts there, Professor DeGarmo?
I think in the monastery or in the convent where Catherine was at that time, there were about, well, earlier there were about 35 nuns, and this is now 15 years later or so, so I'm not sure exactly the number of nuns that stayed in the cloister. 12 left, 9 went on to Wittenberg, but I don't know, that, you know, so there would have been 20 or 30 maybe that stayed in that cloister for that time, at that time. And as far as the danger, yeah, there was definitely danger because they were under very strict rules under the abbess's control. They had taken vows of poverty, of obedience, and chastity and everything. And so for them to break the rules was dangerous for themselves. And also I think the monastery or the convent felt that they had a responsibility to watch over these girls, and also a responsibility to the families who had entrusted the girls to them. And so they wouldn't want anything like this to happen. It would have been a shame brought on the institution, and a danger for the girls, not knowing what was going to happen to them, in the abbess's mind anyway.
Did that vow of celibacy for Luther himself play a part in his hesitancy to marry?
A little bit, maybe, because he you know, even after he had not continued to be a monk, he still observed some of the prayer hours, or many of the prayer hours, for a while, and he had a strong indication of loyalty to his heritage as an Augustinian monk, I would say. And I think maybe that played a little bit of a part, but I think eventually he got to the point where he recognized that this is not something that is from God himself. It's a rule of the church, that it's a man-made rule that we shouldn't follow or shouldn't have to follow, except voluntarily. And so many people were forced into these things at young ages and all. And so I think eventually he felt he had to marry to show that he had broken with that past of legalism, and wanted to show what we can do with the freedom of the gospel as Lutheran clergy or as Lutheran lay people and so on.
Did he have other personal reasons for kind of dragging his feet when it came to the issue of marriage? It's said that he was among the last of kind of the men of the reformers to take a wife. What were his concerns there? Do we know of any?
I'm not sure we know for sure. Maybe he was a little bit older. You know, he was about 42, I think, when he got married. And so that was, you know, he was beyond the usual marrying age of men at that time, although he went on to have 6 children. So, you know, what does that mean? I think he was hesitant, too, because of this scandal that might come from a monk and a nun marrying each other. And he didn't want it to be an opportunity for his enemies. And so he hesitated, but I think in the end he decided he just had to do it as testimony to the freedom of the gospel.
I find the account in the book of their wedding, really kind of their wedding night, one evening, a Tuesday evening, seems very odd from our picture, kind of our wedding culture, that it was done kind of so casually, almost a little bit on the spur of the moment. Even Melanchthon doesn't get invited to the nuptial celebration. Tell us that story.
Well, yeah, it was very small, and I think he kept it that way on purpose because he didn't want to make a big ceremony out of it at that point. although they did have a big wedding celebration a few weeks later. So it wasn't like they were trying to keep it secret. He's immediately told people that he had gotten married, but he didn't want it to be a big to-do. He wanted it to be, this is what has happened. And actually, the idea of a big fancy wedding in the church and everything isn't something that's so ancient in some ways. You know, a couple generations ago, people would go to the parsonage and get married and then go off on their own. They didn't really have a big fancy church wedding with all of the trimmings and everything. So I think that's our modern perspective and not something that was common in ancient times.
Philip Melanchthon had his reservations about Luther marrying. Do we know the nature of those?
I really don't know for sure about that.
Well, okay, let's talk a little bit about the life that they built together. The Luther home is referred to as the Black Cloister. What is that about?
Well, that's the place where Luther came to be a monk and a teacher at the University of Wittenberg. That was where he lived. And then when the Reformation happened, he just stayed on there, and the rest of the monks basically left the place. He was there on his own, supported by Frederick the Wise. And then when he does get married, this becomes their home as well for the family. So it was the place where he had lived and worked for several years before this time, while he was teaching at the university and served as a monk in the monastery there.
It's recorded in the book that you've translated here that Frederick the Wise kind of deeds the home to Luther and basically says you can set up a full household, you can do anything in this home that it takes to run a home. And it really did take a lot to run a home in those days, didn't it?
Yes, and Luther was busy doing all the other things. You know, he was preaching and he was teaching and he was writing and he was traveling here and there. And so Katie really had to take over a lot of that management of the household. And there too, just like in the convent, it was a little city of its own. The Black Cloister with Katie kind of in charge, managing the household, it was a lot the same. She had to have all of these animals and gardens and fruit and she ran a boarding house besides raising her own children and children of relatives that were sent there. It was a very busy, active place. And I'm amazed at all the things that they did. You know, they were only married about 20, 21 years, and all of the things that happened in those years, it is just amazing. It must have been a bustling place to be all the time.
Ashley, in Albert Lee, Minnesota, has this question along those lines. Ashley says, I would say that most women today don't have to tend to cows and pigs, have a brewery in their home, or have a husband like Martin Luther who constantly brought home people who needed to be fed and taken care of, or many other vocations that Catherine had. What can women today do to model Catherine's dedication to Martin Luther and to her family? There was a considerable dedication to this. She really kept him going, didn't she?
Oh, definitely. And I think that's one of the things that you see in the marriage with Martin and Katie is this partnership that they had. It wasn't one dominating the other and the other being this lowly subservient person at all. There was definitely a partnership and, you know, where they would encourage each other and help each other in the things that they were doing. And at times Luther would get really depressed or he would be troubled by this thing that was happening. And Kay would have to you know, encourage him, or sometimes he'd say, well, I don't know what I should do about this. And she would encourage him to do something in different situations. So, you know, being that good helpmeet, being that good partner in the marriage is what both husband and wife can do today. And I think that's one of the things that Luther marrying and the marriage of Martin and Katie together has given us for how we look at things. They weren't perfect people. They had their troubles. They had their difficulties. But the way they worked together or helped each other and supported each other was so important. And, boy, the opportunities that we have now that we don't have to take care of animals all the time, which, you know, only my parents had to do that when they were first married. And so now in our generation, we're free with our time from all of those daily chores, many of us, most of us. And so we have to find other ways that we can serve in our vocations, raising the children and whatever else there might be.
With about a minute here, Robert in Sundance, Wyoming asked this question. Was Catherine a major driving force in the direction that Luther took after their marriage?
I don't think I would call her a driving force. There were people who would accuse her of being too influential and leading Luther down this direction or that direction. But I would say she was influential and encouraging and sometimes urged him on to do things when he was hesitant or wasn't sure how to handle a certain situation. The book tells us about the situation with Erasmus, where Erasmus had written this book and was going after Luther and everything and just saying horrible things and teaching falsely. And Katie's really the one who encouraged Luther and said, you have to answer this diatribe. You have to speak up. And so she was influential, but I wouldn't say a major driving force.
Professor Mark DeGarmo is our guest on this Friday afternoon, October the 18th. We're talking about Katie Luther, wife of 16th century reformer Martin Luther. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @IssuesETC. And our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC. Listener with the best question or comment, we'll get a copy of Mother of the Reformation, translated by our guest, Professor Mark DeGarmo.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Augsburg Lutheran, Shawnee, Kansas. Peace Lutheran, Fresno, California. Trinity Lutheran, Casper, Wyoming. Memorial Lutheran, Houston, Texas. Trinity Lutheran, Gillette, Wyoming. Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California. St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa. Redeemer Lutheran, Caquabeca Falls, Ontario, Canada. St. Jacoby Lutheran, Shawano, Wisconsin. And St. John's Lutheran, North Prairie, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
You can actually walk this path and come to this conclusion. You can know that Christianity was an invention of the Romans. It was done to pacify their subjects.
Nowhere does the Bible teach that being a Christian means that your sinful desires go away.
The best I have is the feel of the water, the taste of the bread and wine, the words of the pastor forgiving me. And I simply have to trust the promise that's connected with those things.
You treat your pastor the way you treat Jesus. You make his life miserable, don't think it's because you love Jesus. You make your pastor's life miserable, it's because you hate God.
In about 20 minutes, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We're talking about Katie Luther, wife of 16th century reformer Martin Luther. Professor Mark DeGarmo is our guest. Mark, let's talk about their family life. You said they had a number of children, and they lost several children, didn't they? Tell us about it.
Yes, they lost their daughter, Elizabeth. She only lived about a year, less than a year. And they lost their second daughter, Magdalena, at age 12. And both of those were very hard on the family. Luther was very emotional at those deaths. But he also trusted that they believed in God, especially the 12-year-old could give testimony about her wanting to go to her Heavenly Father, knowing that she had that faith in Christ. And so it was difficult, and yet he had the comfort of the gospel with them in their baptism and such.
What was life like in the Luther house with kids and boarders and all that kind of stuff?
It must have been just a crazy place to be in some ways, because there were so many things going on and so many people in and out, with the students who would come and live with them, with relatives who would come and live with them, and Luther busy with all his activity. And yet, I think one of the fun things when you read about what's happening in the family is Luther taking time to spend with the children, and the same with Katie. It talks about, you know, the toys that they had crossbows and drums and fifes, and it's just a fun life. I think they really enjoyed many of the things that we would enjoy today. They enjoyed good food. They enjoyed each other's company. They enjoyed singing. They enjoyed just all of the aspects of life. And they supported each other in times of trouble, and really had a great time when there were happy times as well.
What role did music play? Because some of the most famous depictions of the Luther household is of Luther with his lyre and the family gathered around the children, as well of all ages, even a few of those friends like Almsdorf and others, around music. Talk about it.
Yeah, I don't think we know lots and lots about what happened. We know that they did sing together, that Luther wrote hymns for teaching the children, the catechism hymns, but also the Christmas hymn from Heaven Above, Lord Keep Us Steadfast, were especially intended for the children, for his children of his family and all the children of the church. And they've become just classic hymns and very solid in what they teach us about faith and salvation and comfort in Christ. It's a wonderful gift, and Luther loved to sing. And, you know, we always, one of the things I find interesting is there's this idea of a mighty fortress being this powerful battle hymn of the Reformation, it's sometimes called. And yet, you hear passages where Luther says, let's sing the 46th Psalm, and he's thinking of singing a mighty fortress, but in a very gentle and comforting way, is how I picture it. Maybe accompanying them on the lute and that. And it's just, when you play a mighty fortress or sing a mighty fortress in that quiet, soft way, it has a different impact, and a very comforting one, I think. And so that's just one example. But music was definitely a part of what they did. And he, as a young boy, Luther, of course, sang to help support himself as a schoolboy and all. And he certainly wanted his children to have the enjoyment of music as well.
In the latter years, there is for Luther an awful lot of disappointment. The book records that he becomes embittered, upset, at one point wants to leave Wittenberg altogether. What's going on in the latter years before Luther's death?
Well, I think there was just so much turmoil among Luther and his comrades and then also among his enemies. And even his friends were coming up with things that were taking the church in wrong directions. And so he had to deal with that and think through it. And later on, the church, you know, finally had to come up with the formula of Concord to settle a lot of those doctrinal disputes that were going on, even within Lutheranism. He knew that things were not settled during his lifetime, and he foresaw that things were going to be difficult for some time after his death, and so he was concerned about that and didn't want the church to be destroyed.
Talk a bit about the people who passed through the Luther household, in particular some of those students, some of those who we know because they were sitting at the table recording some of the things that Luther often said offhand. Tell us about some of them.
It's just an amazing list, and I can't even begin to know all of the people who were there and remember all of their names even. But some of the You think of Robert Barnes, who went and carried the Reformation to England and was sort of a worker for Henry VIII and ended up, as he's sometimes called, as a Lutheran martyr to Henry VIII in England. And you had many other students sitting and recording things as Luther wrote them down, the famous table talk. It's just an amazing number of people, and we wouldn't have a lot of things from Luther except that those people wrote them down. And I don't know, the influence that you have not only in the classroom but also in your personal working with students, I feel that personally myself when I'm working here at Bethany Lutheran College, that it's not just what I do in the classroom, but my other activity that has an impact on students, and they appreciate that. They get to know you as a real person, and I think Luther certainly did that with the people who passed through his household.
And this would have, of course, required of, I don't know what my wife would do if I was bringing people home all the time or opening my home to people all the time. She certainly had enough to do already with her own family. What was her reaction, as far as we can tell?
Well, Katie was running the boarding house, and so this was a part of what they had taken on to support themselves, not only just getting the support from Frederick the Wise but and the electors, but they would also take in these students to support the family. And so she would have had a household staff. She didn't do all the cooking and all of that all by herself, but she managed the household. And I think she wanted to be helpful as much as she could, and she was. She was generous. I think sometimes she felt Luther was overly generous and would have to, pull him back on a few things and say, "You can't give that away. It's a wedding gift," or something like that. And so she was supportive and did what she felt was right in bringing these people in. And some of them were family members, that had come unto difficult times or for whatever reason were sent to live with Martin and Katie. And they raised them sort of like their own children.
Would it be fair enough to call these people foster children?
You probably could use that term, sure. Yeah, I think so. Because they really treated them like their own children, raised them and helped them in getting situations or helped them out of difficulties. When there was trouble, they would help and make sure they would send a letter to support them or have them sent back to Wittenberg, and they would take care of them then.
That's another aspect of this that is kind of a peek into their personal lives is the many letters. Of course, they didn't have telephones. The many letters that we have from Luther to Luther, the correspondence, even with involving Katie as well. How would you describe it with about a minute or so?
It's really a wonderful thing. I took a whole course on Luther's letters one time, and I really enjoyed reading, especially the letters about his family life and how he would greet the children or have the children receive greetings from the children, and he just loved that so much. And I think we don't have a lot of Katie's letters. She certainly wrote to Luther, but most of those letters aren't available to us anymore. But I can imagine she was be telling him things that were happening with their family, and it was they loved that part of their life together with their family and their children.
We're talking about Katie Luther, wife of 16th century reformer Martin Luther. Professor Mark DeGarmo is our guest, associate professor of religious studies at Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, Minnesota. He's translator of the Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for October, The Mother of the Reformation, The Amazing Life and Story of Catherine Luther. When we come back, we're going to talk about Luther's death, how it came about, how Katie found out about it, and what her life was like. It wasn't particularly easy, what her life was like after Luther's death, and why we should regard Catherine Luther as the mother of the Reformation. A few more minutes with Professor Mark DeGarmo on the other side of the break. Folks, if you appreciate teachings like this on Lutheran history and you're a member of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, please designate your Thrivent Choice dollars before the end of the month to Lutheran Public Radio. Lutheran Public Radio produces Issues, etc. Thrivent will donate an additional $25 if you donate before the end of the month, and that'll go straight to Issues, etc. Do so before October 31st, and it's very easy to do so. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the Thrivent Financial for Lutherans logo. Click on that and designate your Thrivent Choice dollars to Lutheran Public Radio. That will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Issuesetc.org. Click Donate. Look for the Thrivent logo, and then designate those dollars. Remember, an extra $25 before October 31st will help the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. When we come back, a few more minutes with Professor Mark DeGarmo, talking about Katie Luther, wife of the 16th century reformer Martin Luther. And then we're going to play Issues, etc., Soundbite of the Week. Stay tuned. Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. by joining the Issues, etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues, etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
The Lord has gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. These gifts can be received every week at both Grace Lutheran Church and Trinity Lutheran Church in Wichita, Kansas. Join us for divine services at Grace on Sundays at 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., as well as every Wednesday at 11 a.m., or at Trinity every Sunday at 11 a.m. Grace is located at 3310 East Pawnee and Trinity at 611 South Erie. Gather with us around our Lord and His giving His gifts to us. See you soon.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for October is a biography titled The Mother of the Reformation, The Amazing Life and Story of Catherine Luther. This new Reformation resource provides an inside look into the daily lives of Martin and Katie Luther. The Mother of the Reformation is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or you can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org. The Mother of the Reformation, the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. If you designate your Thrivent Choice dollars to Issues, Etc. online before October 31st, Thrivent will designate an additional $25 to Issues, Etc. For more information on how you can designate funds to Lutheran Public Radio and give an additional $25 to LPR, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. Professor Mark DeGarmo is our guest. A few more minutes on Katie Luther, wife of 16th century reformer Martin Luther. The latter years for Luther are kind of dark years, and of course he anticipates dying several times, Professor DeGarmo, but as it turns out, he dies in his hometown, visiting there, I think, to settle some kind of a business dispute. How does Katie Luther hear of her husband's death?
Yeah, the only way, of course, that they could have known that is by sending messengers. And so a messenger was sent from Eisleben to Wittenberg. And so three people were sent to kind of bring the news to Katie, and she kind of sensed when they came what the news was that they were bringing. And so So Melanchthon, Bugenhagen, and Krusiger went over to talk with her. And she was devastated by this thing that had happened, losing her husband, but especially losing him so far from home that she couldn't be with him to nurse him, take care of him in his last days. She felt just devastated by that. But she also recognized that, you know, she had been given many years together with this man, and he had been a gift not only to her but to the whole world. And so she was honored and kind of proud of that in a sense, you know, in a humble sense, I think, if you can say there's such a thing as humble pride. But it was not an easy time. It was difficult. And even from there on, her life was not a happy time after that because of so many other things that happened.
How would you briefly describe her life after Luther's death?
Really, really difficult. Because there were people trying to work against her, take away the things that that Luther really wanted her to have, including the children. You know, by law, he couldn't give her the guardianship of the children. They had to set up someone else as guardian. And even he had to set up a guardian for, or a custodian, legal custodian for Catherine Luther. It's just strange to us today, but that's the way the laws were written at that time. And many people were working against her, thought that that she had been too proud in her lifetime or was going to destroy things. And so a lot of people lost the support, didn't give the support anymore. The one person who continued support throughout the rest of Katie's life was the king of Denmark and Norway, Christian III. And that was a real thing that kept her going through the difficult times, because during these years you also had the Smalcaldic War. And the farms were destroyed by the war, and there just wasn't a lot left. There wasn't enough to support themselves, and they really depended on the charity of other people to take care of them for herself and for her children.
Then with only about 30 seconds, is she rightly called the mother of the Reformation?
Oh, I think so, because of being the mother in the household, and she gives us a great example of that. Because of her interest in faith and theology, we don't hear lots and lots about it, but we definitely hear that she had that, and so the mother of Reformation, definitely. And I think as one of the first pastor's wives in our modern age, and you might call her the first lady of the Reformation in some ways.
Robert in Wyoming and Ashley in Minnesota, if you would send us your mailing addresses, talkback@issuesetc.org, we will send you the book, The Mother of the Reformation. Professor Mark DeGarmo is Associate Professor of Religious Studies at Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, Minnesota, translator of the Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for October, The Mother of the Reformation, The Amazing Life and Story of Catherine Luther. Mark, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.